ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Broadcasting live from the future on apparently around about 26 AM FM stations worldwide, soon to be more, apparently. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's some good news for you and there's some bad news. Well, the good news is definite and the bad news is just my assumption. Well, did you hear that Mubarak has stepped down?
No, I heard pretty much the opposite, but anyway. Yeah, I heard that he won't step down until the September elections.
Well, he stood down this morning. Breaking news. Right. And he's apparently in his bungalow off the Red Sea, sleeping it off, you know, after a hangover of 30 years of dictating power. And the military has stepped in to take control of the country in his absence to ensure a smooth transition, apparently. So I was like, yay, we don't have a dictator. Yay, we have a military dictatorship. And I wonder if it's going to be like on Attack of the Clones or something like that, where the military dictatorship just won't give back the power. There's certainly that potential, in my opinion, but I could be wrong.
Attack of the Clones.
Well, Attack of the Clones, you know, the second Star Wars film, you know, where they grant the Chancellor emergency powers and then he never gives them up and becomes the evil emperor.
I was thinking more of just, you know, walking down a busy street, but anyway.
No, that's
clone mentalities everywhere, bro.
No. That's the movie Zombie Land you're talking about there, bro. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so we can't exactly chop their heads off, though. That's the only thing.
Well, technically we could, especially if we had some of the thousands of guillotines that are being manufactured in the USA at the moment. but we might get in trouble because we're not the military or the government, are we? You know, killing people, we have consequences if that happens. If you're a part of the military or the government, you get promoted.
Killing people under an official banner is a different, you know, designation of death, Vinny, don't you know?
Yeah, it's good. That's good death, and that's good murder. It's legal, you know.
There's green light death, and then there's red light death. Yeah. And we do something bad, and then they judge us and throw it in paper. And they do something bad, and they get paper to cover it up.
Yep, and eventually you get so much paperwork that you wonder whether or not you should try and finish it or build a fort with it. But, of course, if you wanted to build a fort with it, you'd have to do a lot of paperwork to get building consent. Because you can't do jack in this society anymore for free. And which is why I think, really, patriots all around the world are just standing up because they're sick to death. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We don't promote violence or any description, but we certainly promote people advocating their views that the tyranny should stop. And hats off to everybody in Egypt that made it happen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. Favorite made up word is pachow. A colloquialism for something certainly useful in the dance parties. Now, our very special guest Ladies and gentlemen, joining us on the line from the sunny sand spit state of Florida, his name is Nicholas Guillermo, and he joins us now on the line. Nicholas, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Thanks a lot, Vinny, and I appreciate the introduction. I love drum and bass.
Hey, well, it's a drum and bass and dubstep world, and that's all upside down and all around. Now, you have a website called truthactivism.com. For this, for intents and purposes of this first segment with you, I'd love it if you could just explain, you know, who you sort of are and how you came up and how you became an activist. You know, give us the lowdown.
All right. It all started when I was looking for a job in a local paper, and I wasn't really a political person, but this organization that Ralph Nader created called Clean Water Action was hiring, and I just thought I'd check it out. And this just really opened the door for me getting involved, getting interested, and understanding a little bit more about how government works. And it did actually mature my political involvement, because it trained me in the art of door-to-door fundraising. So I worked with them for about 6 months, and I was very successful at it after a few weeks of struggling to make quota. I just stuck with it, and my persistence kept me going. I was just working hard on this campaign to stop pesticides from being allowed to spray, allow them to spray them in schools. And within 6 months, our organization actually lobbied the government successfully. I don't really condone lobbying that much, because it's very speculative and it doesn't work that often. But in this case, it was a small victory, and they did ban pesticide use in schools in the state of Pennsylvania. From a small group of people, it was like eight to 15 people at one point. I was successful at learning the skills of fundraising door to door, and I trained people in those skills. And the time came when I shifted my role. I started working with a group called Clean Air Council, and I worked with them for a year. And that group ended up shutting down some trash to steam plants. And it's just kind of ironic, the state government would take funding for renewable energy, and they'd finance the dumps to burn trash as a renewable energy source. Isn't that great? That was their version of renewable energy. But it was nasty, you know.
Hey, because it's an unlimited resource, because there's so much trash.
They love tires, apparently.
Yeah, and it is renewable, isn't it? Because, you know, every single time that you wind up throwing something out, so you'll buy some more crap to replace it.
It's sad. But we would talk to people door-to-door about this issue, and a lot of people were aware of it. You know, maybe about one out of six doors or so would be interested in listening for a while, and maybe one out of two or three of those people would actually end up giving a contribution, and maybe about one out of three of those people will give a substantial contribution of maybe $30 or more. And interesting job. We'd have to fundraise a quota of $130 a night. And we'd do that in about 4 hours. But we'd get there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and not leave till about 10 p.m. because the first couple hours we did a training session. We talk about current events, and we would rehearse the rap that we would say, you know, basically the rehearsal for the kind of freeform script, so to speak. I learned a valuable lesson. It was about, you know, sales skills. There was seven skills we'd review and a structure to the rap. And it allowed me to gain some experience in fundraising. And, you know, it just kind of opened the door for my interest in politics. But they were a successful group. They were actually run by a lawyer, and he would sue the EPA when the EPA would not do their job. So kind of flipping the tables.
He must have one hell of a job on his hands, because, well, hold on, when was the last time the EPA did their job?
Well, here's some irony. The EPA in Washington, D.C., for example, takes the weekend off, and everybody in the city of Washington knows. They know that in Washington, D.C., that on the weekend, you don't want to go down by the port. You don't want to go down by the water, because it stinks. because 5 days a week, the EPA would regulate the pollutants coming out of the various, you know, pipelines from the factories into the bay. But on the weekend, they would not regulate that pollutant. So what the polluters would do is they would store up the pollution inside their factories, wait for the EPA to take their break, and then they would dump it all on the weekend. So,
and this would go into waterways, Nicholas? Is that right? Or
yeah, that was for pollution going right into the waterways from various factories.
Like little kids on the weekend, you know, they want to go fishing down the lake or something? I mean,
well, this is the Washington, D.C. Bay. I really would... I don't think people fish there. It's pretty sad to think that people do fish there, but they probably do. Okay. You know,
no survival mechanisms when it goes down. Then
I stay right now in Tampa, Florida, and I'm just here temporarily. I'm moving back to the East Bay in Oakland, California, and right here we have one of the nation's dirtiest coal-fired power plants. It's called Big Bend, and it was older than the Clean Air Act. So therefore, it's exempt. It's grandfathered in. So they're allowed to pollute as much as they want to. They don't have the scrubbers. And it's a dirty bay. And people fish off this bay. And they eat the fish, unfortunately. But, you know, that's
I wouldn't be eating the fish out of the Gulf at the moment anyway.
No, not with all the core exit and everything.
Well, people are. If you buy fish from the supermarket and prepackaged and frozen. I mean, where does it come from? Where does a lot of it come from? I mean,
yeah. And he did. Speaking of which, where does it come from? Our Lord and Savior Barack H. O'Berry, a while ago, I remember an article coming out that they started this PR campaign to get people to try and eat the Gulf seafood, but the seafood that they were eating at the White House wasn't from the Gulf.
Right. Yeah. You know, they're full hypocrites. He really upsets me because. I didn't want McCain to win. I actually worked with Nader, but it's like a dead end. Without a ranked choice voting system, they also call it instant runoff voting. You know, people do feel stuck within the two-party system, and that's why, you know, a lot of people are awake and aware to an extent, and they just don't vote because they don't want to vote for the lesser two evils.
But wouldn't that qualify as a rank choice system because both of your choices are pretty rank?
You know, Obama, you know, ran as like an environmental candidate, you know, and it's really disappointing that he hired Tom Vilsack, the Monsanto lobbyist. And I heard him speaking about clean coal and how we're going to save our, you know, environment with clean coal technology, and I knew it was
because if anybody knows about saving the environment, it's Monsanto.
Yeah, you know, those
it's just like how he gets banking. He's just got Wall Street guys and lobbyists from left, right, and center, all the big NGOs, and so I mean, so much for this, you know, people's resistance leftist movement has turned into a corporate dictatorship.
Yeah. Now, my direction with truthactivism.com is a little different now. I started out working with these lobbying groups, but I eventually became more disenfranchised with that system as well. It was a few years later, I was on a college campus, and I ran into this guy circulating a petition, and they asked me to sign the petition. And I learned something on that day that I'll never forget because it's changed my life. He wasn't just circulating a petition. He was circulating what's called a ballot initiative. I went to a sovereignty meeting here in Tampa the other week, and I asked the folks there if they knew what a ballot initiative was, and not one person raised their hand. And it's a state of America. People are not aware of the rights that we have. And this little-known fact called the ballot initiative process is not really discussed very much, and it's not really talked about, I believe, because it's a form of governance that truly empowers the people, and the elites in the media, what have you, would not really want the people to know about the ballot initiative process. So truthactivism.com is to raise awareness about the process and taking it back, because there currently is a clandestine industry based around achieving ballot access for different political action committees' purposes. So if they want to, let's say, pass some legislation that the legislators are not able to get through because of the you know, partisanship, and they have to eventually get the governor's signature. If the partisanship is blocking certain legislation, political action committees will propose the legislation to be put on the ballot by hiring a ballot initiative contractor to subcontract different what they call coordinators, who coordinate different offices in different cities to hire people to gather signatures. These are the professional petitioners. And I met this guy. He introduced me to what the ballot initiative process was about. And for 6 years, up till today, I had been involved in the ballot initiative process, working in the industry. And I realized the only reason why there's an industry in the first place is because people are not taking their responsibility to use the ballot for their own means. So they have to hire these private companies to put initiatives on the ballot. The most important thing that I'm bringing awareness of with this project, Truth Activism, is that all the political parties, the Republicans, the Democrats, unfortunately even the Libertarians and the Green Party, who I absolutely agree with more than the two bifurcated parties, they all have about 5% of the voting population at least to even qualify as a party. And 5%, ironically, is the same amount of voters necessary to qualify an initiative for the ballot. So when they tell you that we need to kick these politicians out of office, and they tell you about how corrupt the other candidates are that are currently in office, you have to question their integrity, because when was the last time any of the political parties offered to empower the voters, their constituents, with a recall petition that would actually kick those politicians out of office instead of having you passively wait for their terms to expire? You know, and they promote these great agendas, different initiatives, different legislation, for example, that would help out people in their state. The Green Party is promoting, you know, maybe like renewable energy. The Green Party California last year was promoting a state bank solution, like the State Bank of North Dakota. The Libertarians also promote, you know, initiatives to like end land taxes, for example. And I just find it so ironic that they'll promote these ideas, but when was the last time they ever attempted to empower their constituents with a ballot initiative that they could sign to put on the ballot that would allow the voters of the state to bypass the governor, bypass the legislator, turning that legislation into law with a popular vote?
Well, they probably want to stay alive, Nicholas. I mean, that's the truth. They probably just want to stay alive. And if they know if you were to do something like that, you're going to be way over the target. You know, you're going to be well over the mark. And things probably happen to you.
Yeah. Well, it's like we found out yesterday, man, is that politicians, it's not they basically, an ability to do that would mean that people would be able to solve the problems that are happening in their own communities. And you can't have that, because then you'd have no need for politicians. And the politicians don't solve any problems anyway. They're just there to create more problems so that they can stay in the frickin' job.
Yeah. It'd be like kicking the mob out of New York and everywhere else, and, you know, get them rid of all the gangs on the East Coast, West Coast, whatever. Would the police have a vested interest in that? I'd say so.
Lose employment.
I have this fun YouTube video of myself confronting police who are attempting to kick me out of a shopping center where I was collecting signatures. And the irony is that I not only had the legal right to collect signatures at that shopping center because of a Supreme Court case called the Pruneyard Law in California, but the initiative was actually for a localized government. It was an initiative to localize their taxation and spending instead of sending it to Sacramento for Sacramento to dole out the expenditures. And what that would have done was essentially protected the police department funding as well as other government services from Sacramento trying to dole it out to other poorer, less well-off areas of the state. And, I told them about it. I said, hey, this initiative is to help you save your job. But they gave me a hard time, and I read them my rights, and I stood up and, basically got them to back off, because I showed them some papers like the Pruneyard Act and was able to get them to back down. But, I mean, sometimes these initiatives really are in the best interest of local governments, yet they don't seem to want to really empower the voters. Because like you said, Vinny, if they were to empower the voters to start solving the problems, they wouldn't have a job.
Well, and more to the point, the voters wouldn't be apathetic anymore, so the politicians wouldn't be able to get away with 99.99% of the crap that they do. Yeah. You know, because the reason why everybody's so apathetic, in my opinion, is because they literally have no power. And so what reason is there for somebody to actually give a flying F about what goes on?
Well, right now we are under siege by international bankers. In the United States, we are seeing a complete collapse of the economy. Food prices are nearly doubling. The price of gas is set to go up by, experts' predictions. Like you said, Lindsey Williams the other day predicted it's going to go to $200 a barrel. And, you know, we're suffering. The only state in the country that has solved their economic crisis by preempting the bank's ability to preempt them was the voters of North Dakota. And the way that they created a state bank was not by getting the legislator to create it, because they were all essentially in the pockets of the bankers. They got the state bank because they put it on the ballot and they passed it by a popular vote. So, you know, there is some history behind the ballot initial process serving the people. It's also the way that marijuana was legalized. So, there's history behind it. There's some facts behind it, and it has proven effective. And I would like to encourage people to understand what it's about so that they could promote the concept with others instead of waiting for politicians to finish their terms in office. If they're really corrupt, we should use the recall process to kick them out immediately.
Well, you know, and kicking politicians out, I mean, that's just like a dream of mine. But
what do you think?
But what do you do? You know, I mean, it's not like you can just put on some steel cap boots and then just literally pick them up and drop kick them out the frickin' door and watch them roll down the steps end over end, which would be quite amusing and far more effective than Parliament running in general. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison.
Good morning.
I don't like them, and I
hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We've decided to turn this sort of interview with Nicholas into somewhat of a panel discussion. We're joined in addition right now by Chris Wingate, because I think the subjects that you gentlemen are both talking about sort of dovetail with each other. Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you in New Zealand this morning?
Nice and sweaty. The humidity is right up there. And I was just in a studio in KFM on K Road today, and even standing right in front of the fan, it was blisteringly hot.
Well, it's wonderfully cool over here in West Australia.
Excellent. And I'm sure everybody in Texas with the 15-degree Fahrenheit average will be able to ascertain something much worse. Now, the constitutional jury system that Chris has come up with, and what was the ballot system that you were talking about there, Nick?
Yeah, the ballot system, from what I understand, had been recently abolished in the entire European nations by the UN. They eliminated the right to ballot access. I'm not sure how it works in Australia, but I'm sure some of the same strategies I want to employ to organize people would be beneficial in general for, just promoting constitutional candidates or candidates that would better represent the people, and also kicking politicians out of office.
Well, I think, like I say, always a dream of mine to kick politicians out of office. And, Chris, I mean, you've experienced a certain terrible consequences and have come to the conclusion that basically Parliament having immunity is an incredibly bad thing because it means that the people can't hold them to account.
It is a bad thing right around the world. Politicians hide behind what's commonly known as sovereign immunity, which simply means that even though they have a fiduciary obligation, a fiduciary duty of care, they use the immunity to stop anyone challenging a breach of that duty of care. Hence my idea of establishing a constitutional jury, but of course we can't do that until the Crown and Judicial Immunity or Sovereign Immunity is actually removed first of all. And of course that idea is, the method in which we do that is by flooding the political parties with new members or converting existing members to agree that it's time that we have a method of holding our politicians to account. In America, it's very difficult because basically there is a two-party system, and trying to get any other parties into the political play is virtually impossible.
A friend of mine was able to single-handedly get an initiative on the ballot in the city of Sarasota, Florida, for voting. And
what you're talking about there is in state.
Yeah, this was a citywide initiative, and it passed. Yeah. It's the ranked choice voting system, and as soon as that passed, it opened the doors for the third party candidates to run without being spoiler votes.
I'm talking about at the federal level. As far as the state level goes, it's different. But at a federal level, it's a closed shop.
Yeah. That's why my whole project is about taking back states' rights. You know, I wish that it would be something that could work across the board worldwide, but not every country grants the citizens the same kind of empowerment. We have the options right now. It is a way that we could hold our politicians accountable and promote real direct changes to the constitutions that would really save our economy and social justice. And on your topic of, erasing their immunity, one of the other projects that I'm promoting is to eliminate what they call the Bar Association, because I had an interesting conversation with this lady who created a ballot initiative petition called Jail for Judges, and she and others have basically realized that the Bar Association is nothing more than a good old boys club that keeps the lawyers from suing other lawyers and judges for corruption, because the bar holds their title to prosecute. And all those judges have to do if they're challenged is take that, kick that lawyer off the bar. And it's an artificial immunity that they give themselves. So if we were eliminate the bar.
Is that in any way dissimilar from what we've got in New Zealand, Chris?
Well, you've got the Bar Association in New Zealand, but, that's just a monopoly structure for cash flow for lawyers.
Yep.
And they're simply untouchable because, of course, if, like myself, I had a problem with the judiciary and you go to complain to the politicians, but the politicians claim that they can't do anything in relation to complaints about the judiciary because of separation of power, even though separation of power is basically a claim that you've got three hands on the power. You've got the executive, which is cabinet. You've got the legislator, which are the politicians in Parliament, and the third hand is the judiciary. But if you take a look at what separation of power is all about, it's about checks and balances. Yet, where are the checks and balances? It's just a total fiction, apart from the fact that separation of power isn't even a law. It's not a rule. It's just simply an idea. But this is the sort of crap that we have to put up with.
Yeah, I would argue that, I agree with you. But, if we can realize our potential as the public, as a citizenry, as a fourth system of checks and balances, then there's some potential that we could start to heal the wounds afflicted on society.
I agree.
But it's going to take organization and effort.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, Nick, is that the so-called checks and powers and balances in the upper levels are basically just a front, you know, so that they can keep screwing us all. And so, therefore, the only people that we could conceivably count on, and this is a possibility, it's certainly not for sure, is the non-politically affiliated, non-business affiliated activists in our community who are actually doing things not for reasons of patriotism, in other words. They don't have that. Everybody's got an agenda. I completely agree, though. Well, you know, and this is the part about, you know, supposed balance. I believe that the key to balance is being able to swing to either extreme and still be able to come back to the center. Now, I could be wrong. But my take on politics is that, well, if you're in the system, that you're very, very limited in what you can do because there's all these real rules, regulations. However, if you're outside of the system, if you're a street protester or whatever, you're limited by what you can do, but not by what you can say.
Sure. I mean, you can say whatever you want to say, but, you know, if you're saying something that is really harmful to the system, you won't see that comment appear in mainstream media. You know, a lot of people can turn around in amongst the system and they can say, well, you know, we have a democratic system, and if you don't like the system, then, you know, you've always got the right to vote. You know, but what's the use of a vote if, you know, you've suffered a huge injustice, the politicians don't listen, you know, they fail their duty of care, there's nothing you can do about it. Hence the idea of a constitutional jury and the idea of, you know, removing Crown and judicial immunity. I find it absolutely astounding that our politicians, you know, they stand there in a fiduciary capacity. I mean, in every single sense, they're a fiduciary. Government is a trust structure owned by the people. These people work for us. But the remarkable thing is that they've got this rule in place of immunity, which comes from the, you know, the old rule of the king can do no wrong in the service of the people. And they use that to hide all of their incompetence. And unfortunately, what it's done right around the world, it has attracted the wrong type of people to run our systems of state. We've basically got smiling idiots in there who are great at handshakes and, you know, making nice, you know, cheap little lines to the media in order to, you know, fence it and try and keep everybody happy. But, you know, when it comes to actual operation or, you know, strategic thinking, that, you know, these are the wrong type of people. They simply...
That's a reflection of society, though, Chris, is it not? I mean, the average society isn't strategically thinking either.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, David Longy said that to me, you know, some years ago with a lunch I had with him and Peter Tapsell. You know, I was talking about these issues and David said to me, well, you know, haven't you heard that the people get the politicians they deserve? But the point that I made to David was, yes, but the politicians deserve to owe the people a duty of care. You know, I know what you're saying insofar as, you know, politicians can be reflective of society generally, but, you know, this is where the immunity creates the danger. This is where the liability, it's a little bit like having a very dangerous playground whereabouts, you know, kids almost certainly will get injured. It really isn't allowed. You know, the safety people will come in and shut the park down. You're not allowed to do that. But with our political management of our countries right around the world, we can't do that. The politicians won't take the step to put the safety mechanisms in place to make sure that the people are actually protected. So we really do have a false democracy.
And when our hands are tied to such an extent, doesn't it show that there's something fundamentally wrong also?
You know, yeah, absolutely.
When we've got so many bright minds around this country, around the world, wanting to change the system fundamentally, and we all feel kind of powerless, essentially. We're not powerless.
Yeah, absolutely.
We kind of feel that
way. Yeah, there are some amazingly skilled people who can contribute enormously to dealing with a whole range of issues. Just take a look at Parliament down in Wellington. I don't know if you guys have spent any time sitting down there actually watching them operate, but, you know, I've been at all levels of Parliament and listened to the way that they conduct themselves. And you would never see that type of conduct in Fortune 500 companies or, you know, top Australian corporate companies. It's just a different discipline. It's a different attitude, a different way of thinking. Their comprehension on issues in major corporates are totally different. It's just a different animal. And, you know, the sad thing about the political arena is that bright minds, often don't like to suffer fools. And, I was invited by Judith Kirk for the Rotorua seat for the National Party. And I turned it down. I turned it down because, you know, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't sit there with some bloody idiot who simply cannot comprehend common sense. I would get up and knock the guy out, which of course have very bad consequences. But in a private corporation, you can just fire the bastard and you can tell him in no uncertain terms exactly where his brain capacity is. But in the parliamentary system, you can't do that. But of course, if we remove the immunity, then society's got a safety net. We then have an ability to be able to hang them out for dry and show them up for what they are.
But hold on, Chris. I mean, the reason why you can do that in businesses is because businesses are not democracies. They are dictatorships, aren't they? The owner says what goes, and therefore, if you don't want to suffer fools, you don't have to because you have total control. But the possibility of that, becoming into parliament, just takes away everybody's rights because, at work and in many cases, you don't have rights. Like if you were pro-cannabis, for example, you would lose your job simply for saying that.
I hear what you're saying, but the thing is that corporations are what you're doing is that you're figuring out an objective and you're attempting to carry out that objective as best as possible using very clever strategy. And of course, government is for the provision of services for the protection of the people. Both are basically the same. It's just the method in which we carry out the objective is different between government and a private corporation. And, you can see the difference between the two. One does it cost effectively, does it quickly.
We're going to continue this discussion after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Our very special guest for our impromptu panel discussion is Christopher Wingate and Nicholas Guillermo, joining us from Australia and America on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, which is from New Zealand. We'll be right back after the break with our fabulous international sort of, globalist type sentiment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz and very special thanks to our first New Zealand affiliate, Rush 89 FM in the Tron, Hamilton, the city of the future, the city of the UN's Agenda 21. Our very special guest joining us live from Perth, Australia, the Kiwi Christopher Wingate, and also joining us live from Tampa, Florida, is Nicholas Guillermo. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thanks. Pleasure being here.
Ooh, man, that was synchronous timing right there. Now, Nick, you had a point to make about how the accountability is kind of like being lost and how to kind of get it back, I believe.
Sure. The people are going to be the fourth system of checks and balances. I hope it doesn't boil down to us having to feel like, another uprising, revolt, like they have in Egypt when people are on the brink of starvation. I'd rather see us do something, sooner than later. And I realize that every single activist group that's out there, they get their members involved and there's really a lot of pressure on them to save the world. I think more emphasis today needs to be put on the members to play a small role and to decentralize the whole solution, because it's going to boil down to strength in numbers at the end. You got to have a lot of people behind the solutions. But if every single person were just to get one, two, three people, it'd make a huge difference. And if you just look at the math, if you were to, you know, say you want to save the environment and have legalized hemp for industry, for example, and, you know, you're really behind this cause, and let's say you live in California, you want to get three people behind the concept and to be aware that a ballot initiative could be proposed by the voters, and then know that if those three people just share that information about what a ballot initiative is and how simple it is to create one, that they can tell three other people. And that process continued in just 13 steps. You could have over well over a million people. So that could literally mean that if three people went out and met three of their neighbors that they didn't even know and got them behind the cause in 1 week, you know, on, after work or on the weekend, and then those three neighbors continue that same step the next week, it's proven. You just look at the math. In 13 weeks, you'd be able to organize over a million people. The farmers in North Dakota were able to get 30% of their population to sign seven different petitions to put them all on the ballot, including the one to create the State Bank of North Dakota. And this was before they had telecommunications. And I really think that if they were able to do this back then, before they had phones, before they had cars, you know, there's no reason why we can't do this today. And in states like – in countries like Australia, New Zealand – if your solution boils down to just electing the right candidates, you can't kick them out. It seems reasonable to me that it's going to be a matter of, you know, decentralizing the network, getting enough people, the network of their friends and family, to be strong behind the next election, to make sure you get someone who represents the communities from the community, who's not going to sell out to globalist interests, and then just let everybody know and let everybody play a role. Because, you know, one little group of activists is not going to be able to reach out to over 4 million people in Australia. But if everybody plays a small role, it will be...
Well, you know, and that's an interesting point that you make there, because the prospect of changing your government is a daunting one to an individual. However, if you are one of, say, 20 million people in the streets, as is happening in Egypt, it kind of seems like, hey, this is definitely possible, and there's no reason for me to stay home, not when I can be out on the streets making it happen, you know? Therefore, I mean, we do need more people involved. And it's a social movement, it's an economic movement, it's a political movement, it's a transparency movement, it's a patriotic movement. It's basically a catch-all for any type of movement that has ever existed throughout this entire society, because we're all under attack here simultaneously. And because the globalists are basically in every country, it means that almost everybody in the world can recognize a single global enemy. And I think that enemies are an important concept in order to unite people.
You have to know about the problem in order to get people aware of it so that they actually want to do something about it. And
well, that's the thing. That's the first thing. Yeah. I mean, that's what I meant before, Chris, too. I mean, it's having politicians that fulfill their duty of care depends on a society that has their own duty of care, you know, the civic duty, their own civic responsibilities to their society.
And now, Chris, you mentioned...
society to be able to hear about the problem, because the media is completely manipulated.
Do you think if we took the government back, do you think the media would be on our side at all more, or do you think the media is under a is in an external system of control?
Well, who knows? I don't know who controls the media. All as I know is what I see, and you know, I've been involved in a number of events around the world. Right there on the front line, and you know, what I see the media doing, reporting on, is totally different to what is actually happening. I mean, for example, the events in Egypt right at the moment, you know, the CIA are clearly behind the military takeover there. You know, you've got the same bunch of scumbags who were, you know, who were in control beforehand. Mubarak wasn't the head guy. He was just part of the team. That country's been all about bribes. The arms kickback money has been absolutely enormous, being paid into Swiss bank accounts. It's been going on for years. You know, for the military to take over, for anybody to think that that's a win for the Egyptian people, they're clearly deluding themselves.
Yeah, I completely agree there. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming on the show today. My opinion is that if the media won't do their job, don't get angry with them. Just do their job for them, because they are no longer relevant. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Nick, for coming on the show. Yeah,
thank you so much, Benny.
Our own media.
Thanks, guys. You.
All right. There they go, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a very interesting discussion. And what I like about Truth is that, well, anybody who really is a patriot who gives a flying F about their people, their country, sovereignty, or health, or any description of good in this world, you find out that they're also generally pretty nice guys who you can have very interesting conversations with and indeed learn a lot from. And this is the reason why I started Guerrilla Media. This is the reason why I do this radio show, so that these kind of people can get the coverage that they deserve, because the media will not do it, because they're a pack of useless, pathetic, spineless, scumbag chicken nuggets who can't find a pencil in a stationery store.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. This is Will for a change, not Vinnie. He's run away from us. Now he's back.
You'll never escape me.
Just leave us alone for a segment, would you, Vinnie?
Sorry, bro.
Do we have any success with our caller, though? Do we have any?
Yes, we have. We'll be bringing him up momentarily. Ladies and gentlemen, his name is Brian McDermott, and his website, I believe, is something along the lines of Frack. I've got
something
it here.
Something
along the lines of Australian sovereignty. You know what I'm talking about. Brian, welcome to the program.
G'day. How are you, Vince?
Borderlining on fabulous is my party line, so in the next Aussie election, vote fabulous.
Okay.
Yep. Now, what's your website there, Brian?
I got a couple of websites. Probably the most relevant one and current one that would interest you people is www.freestatevoice, freestatevoice, all one word, .com.au.
All right. Now, we've got just a short segment here, so I was wondering if you could just sort of summarise sort of who you are and how you kind of got into your particular field and what you're really up to at the moment.
Okay, well, as you probably know, I live in God's country, otherwise known as Queensland, and in Australia, and just coming up seven years ago, a group of us seceded from Canberra, from all the evils and unconstitutional nonsense in Canberra, due to a whole heap of reasons, which is up on another website called cqfreestate.com. And we formed Central Queensland Free State. which is another state altogether, but it's a free state. And we advise, we send out six registered letters all on the one day on the 1st of July 2004. We sent one to Johnny Howard, who was Prime Minister at the time, one to Michael Jeffrey, who was Governor General at the time, one to Peter Beattie, who was Queensland Premier at the time, one to Quentin Bryce, who was Queensland Governor at the time, she's now Governor General, one to Kofi Annan, who was at the time Secretary of the United Nations, and one to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. All went out the same day, registered mail. The letter that we sent is up on our other website, cqfreestate.com.
And essentially you're just saying that the government's corrupt and we're not taking part in it anymore.
That's right.
Yeah. Fair enough, as you should. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, joining us live from the fabulous desert country state of Australia is Brian McDermott from Queensland, and we'll be right back after the break with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the soothing sounds of organised crime. To anybody who's ever heard a Rothschild speak knows what I'm talking about. The marvellous scum that rule the planet go by many names, and one of the biggest names of the worst, most disgusting and decadent scum that have ever walked the face of the earth, other than Satan himself, is the House of Rothschild, which is our very special guest, Brian McDermott's favourite subject. Brian, tell us how when you first heard about the Rothschilds.
When I was about 4 years old, I was brought up on a cane farm, in cane farms in North Queensland, central North Queensland, the Mackay District. And my dad was I don't know where he got his information from, because this was back in World War II. And he was a volunteer spotter, coast watcher for the RAAF. And we were on party line, you know, bush telephone line out through the bush, and he'd ring it up by number of three short calls and one long call, and then speak in code to... and so forth and so on, and to pass on military information, what aircraft were going over and so forth. He had a good set of binoculars they provided him with. And I think one way or another, he got information through the military and through, I think, the early church. The early priests used to go through there with horses and their sacks on the back with towing a pack horse, and say mass under a mango tree, and then go on up to Proserpine. And they, one way or another, he became very, very well informed. And he was one of the very early members, and you, if you're a Kiwi, you'd know what I'm talking about. He was one of the very early members in Australia of a movement known as Social Credit. I don't know whether you've come across it or not, but it was...
We've got a good social credit party here in New Zealand that gets absolutely no media coverage and absolutely no votes. Yes, we're well aware.
Well, they were quite a force to be reckoned with in New Zealand at one stage, until they made a one unholy mess of it, but that's another story. But you know what I'm talking
about. They were discredited by saying, oh, well, that's funny money. Well, that's funny that's money. Right. What we've got right now is effing hilarious money.
That's right. Exactly. And anyway, yeah, I think he got a lot of information through them too. In its early days, it was very... This was long before it became infiltrated with the enemy. And anyway, he... I used to listen to him at the dinner table, and he was very politically minded, and I can remember him repeating often the old statement by Amschel Mayer, the founder of the House of Rothschild, gloating and chuckling into his vodka, "Give me the control of the credit of a nation, and I care not who makes the laws." And...
Well, that's the golden rule, isn't it, Brian? He who has the gold makes the rules.
Exactly.
And nobody's got more gold than the House of Rothschild.
Beg your pardon?
And nobody's got more gold than the House of Rothschild.
Yeah. And it's all been accumulated by usury, of course. None of these guys have ever done an honest day's work in their life in the last 5,000 years, and they're not going to start now.
Oh, come on, Brian. What have you got against usury? It's built such wonderful things for us.
How could they make money otherwise, Brian? They have to charge interest. So there's no other way.
Yeah, of course. I've got a two-part audio video in cartoon form that I'm about to publish. I'll publish it the moment I get off the air, the moment you guys have finished annoying me. just joking. I'll publish it, and it'll be up on the Free State Voice.
We'll be sure to spread it around too for you.
Yeah, and it's on the...
What are you doing back there, mate? Are you eating out of a bowl or something? It's coming kind of coming across on air.
I'm finished now.
All right. Okay. All good. Good. Good.
It's called The Money Lenders and the Stupid Goyim. It's called Swindling the Goyim. Part one and two.
Well, could you define Goyim for me?
And it's starring, you're sitting down, it's starring in cartoon form, Eddie Rothschild. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Goyim is a, you're not familiar with Goyim. Goyim is a goy, G-O-Y, or plural, Goyim, G-O-Y-I-M, is a... Gazar term, a Talmudic term, if you like, a Jewish term. I've got to be careful about Jewish because there's not all Jews belong to the Zionists. Not all Jews are Zionists, and not all Zionists are Jews.
And not all Jews are Semites, and not all Zionists are Semites either. You know, and I love it how people get all that kind of stuff mixed up. You know, it's like mixing up a religion and a political belief and a race.
Yeah, exactly. Well, most of the, about 95% now of Zionists, or people who call themselves Jews, are not Semitic at all. They come from the Khazarian Empire, you probably know about, and they weren't converted to... I don't even call it Jewishism. It's Babylonian Talmudism, to be more accurate.
Until they're more Caucasian, aren't they?
They are Caucasian, from Khazaria. And they weren't converted. They took on Babylonian Talmudism, which is nothing to do with the Torah or the Old Testament. They just picked bits and pieces out of the Old Testament, which suits their political ploy, when necessary, to make it look
good. And that's why we have Talmudic Jews against Zionism today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're known as Khazars, or otherwise known as Ashkenazim, and they refer to the Gentiles, the non-Jews, that's you and I, as the Goyim.
Goyim means cattle, does it not?
Yeah, goya means, it virtually means human cattle. And they even go further than that and refer to the stupid goyim. and that's on the two videos that you're about to see today.
And the Masons use similar terms for us because the Masons draw a lot from the Kabbalah, I suppose.
Well, it's interesting you should say that because Freemasonry is Jewish. Freemasonry is Talmudic. It was created and developed by the Jews. A lot of people don't know that, and a lot of Freemasons don't know that.
They should from Hiram Abiff, the constructor of King Solomon's Temple.
Yeah, well, Hiram Abiff, who never existed.
yeah. Who they sacrifice over and over again. That's just
to hoodwink the lower echelon of Freemasons coming in blindfolded and having to take a vow not to disclose anything under penalty of getting their throat cut from ear to ear and their guts ripped out and their heart buried in the sand where the tide covers it twice a day and all that crap. Excuse the French. the lower echelon Freemasons are not aware of anything until they get further up into about the 27th, 28th, 29th and 30th degrees. And even then, they don't... That nothing really is disclosed about Freemasonry. What they learn then is gradually, only after they've proven themselves and sold their soul to the devil, they then are let gradually into the overall plan for the world. World takeover, new world order, you know what I mean. This is all Freemasonry. People call it Judeo-Masonic, which is its correct term, really. It's a Judeo-Masonic conspiracy. There's no other word for it.
Well, you know, and it's interesting that you say that because our Prime Minister is both at the same time, a 32nd degree Freemason and a member of the New Zealand Zionist Association?
Well, John Key is, and I'm not being racist here or anything, but John Key is also a quarter Jewish, same as Adolf Hitler. Our mayor in Auckland here, John Banks, is also a 33rd degree Mason.
Really? Yeah. Johnny
Banksy
Howard.
Banksy is 33rd degree. Oh, mate, that wants me to. That makes me want to ambush him like an eighth time.
Yeah, Johnny Howard's one too. Howard's not even his real name. A lot of people don't know that. Julia Gillard is an atheist and a communist and a lesbian.
Same as Helen Clark.
Helen Clark. Gordon Brown, not Gordon Brown, Bob Brown, the senator from Tasmania. How the hell they keep voting him back in, I'll never know. Those Tasmanians must be, it must be true, they're all inbred.
Why are Jews Jews? Why are they actually called Jews? Where'd the name come from?
That's an interesting one. It's really a misnomer. The word Jew is really a misnomer. And the word Jew did not exist prior to about circa 17th century. Prior to that, the Latin, if you go back into traditional church doctrine and traditional church translations of Holy Scripture, both the Old and New Testament. If you go back you will find that and even today in the Latin version of the Latin Mass, wherever it says Jew, if you look at the Latin version, it says Judaorum. That's written with a J or an I, but there's no J really in Latin. It's an I, so it's Judaorum. And the correct English translation for that is Judaic. Okay, now, Judaic means from the house of Judah, literally speaking, from the house of Judah. Now, they, after going through, ever since the 7th century, there was all this stuff going on about the, like, since Khazaria was converted, quote-unquote. They were converted for political reasons, by the way, not for religious reasons. King Bulan, the kingdom of, don't know, have, well, you know your history or whether you're interested, but King Bulan was the king of Khazaria, which was an ancient kingdom between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea in the Caucasus Mountains. And you're quite right, they are Caucasian. They're not Middle Eastern at all. And Bulan, they were a very capable race, but very warlike. They couldn't stop fighting one another, fighting the neighbours, fighting each other, tearing one another to pieces. And the king said, well, look, you know, these people got a lot of ability, but we need something to quieten them down and steer them all in the one direction instead of fighting each other. And so he, to cut a long story short, he heard about the three monotheistic religions down south of him, down in Palestine and around the Palestinian area. One was Christianity, one was Judaism, and the other one was Islam. And so he decided to get each of, to get some teachers from each of the those three monotheistic religions up and listen to what they had to say, so that they could make a decision about which way they'd go. So he did. And up they all
Does that mean that Jews are in fact Muslims?
No. That's another story. and I'm publishing that also within the next 2 or 3 days. In fact, the first version of it is already published. It's the latest headline, I think, in the Free State Voice. It's Islam versus Christianity. Islam dash the Quran versus the Bible, or the Bible versus the Quran, or something. That's just an intro. It's only a short article.
There's a relationship between them, isn't there?
Ah, it's interesting you should say that. The second article I'm going to publish is going to might cause World War III, if not World War IV.
Let's hope so.
Muslims won't like it. The fact is that the Quran wasn't written by Muhammad. Firstly, it wasn't written by Muhammad at all. Secondly, Muhammad never existed. And thirdly, the Quran was written by a rabbi, or a couple of rabbis. There's one for you. Very few people know this.
Was that based on the... Does that mean the Quran was based on the Torah or something like that?
It always was. It's a bastardization of some of the Old Testament, some of the New Testament, some of the Talmud, and some localized phrases or laws, if you want to call them laws or instructions, that suited the local environment. At the time when Muhammad was supposed to have been born in Mecca, would you believe the city of Mecca didn't exist? And that's a matter of recorded history. It's not just me talking or some half-baked historian. It's a matter of recorded history. Mecca didn't exist back then in the 6th century, whenever it was. It didn't exist for 150 to 200 years later. The idea was, of course, is the old story of divide and conquer, because Christianity, back in those days, was pretty strong in Arabia.
And we'll get into more of this after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Our very special guest is Brian McDermott, joining us from Queensland, Australia. And we'll be right back after this very short break. Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and EveneyEastwoodShow.com. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, because we will come for you eventually, you devilish scumbags in Parliament. Now, I would like to address something here. We've got a great listener from Tunisia who's a devout Muslim. His name's Ahmed, of course, and he was wondering, in the Quran there's a whole bunch of things, like there's these interesting what are they called, mathematical differentials and things like that, which are very, very cool, apparently. I don't know too much about it, but apparently there's some interesting stuff that's been predicted in there that has come to pass, and of course this is in some part true with the Bible as well. And what his question was to you, Brian, is like, where do all these things come from, you know?
Well, what things, first of all, what things is he talking about?
I'm not sure. We'll have to wait until he replies.
I mean, could you explain to us how you determined that the Quran was in fact written by a rabbi? Because I believe I've heard that before, so
yeah. It's a fairly lengthy subject, but I'll be publishing it, the full document, on my website. I'll have it. I've photocopied it, but it's out of the original article. But they've got sort of pictures in the background, sort of. It didn't photocopy, in other words, so I'm retyping it so that it'll come up clear, you know, and easy to read. It's a bit lengthy, but I'll have it done by Monday night, and it'll be published, hopefully not later than Tuesday.
I mean, in this whole New World Order paradigm, I mean, from my point of view anyway, I want to expose the criminal banking system. I want to expose how they're poisoning us, trying to kill us off with their aspartame and their fluoride and their MSG and their mercury vaccines. And I want to expose all this. And at the same time, you know, I have my personal beliefs. I believe in God and I believe in design and I believe in a lot of things. But I kind of keep it a bit more to myself at times because I don't want to get into these divisive fights or I think, well, first of all, we fight the New World Order and their program on the ground and then we sort each other out and in the final summation of things. But, I mean, from what I can see anyway, I mean, I've heard Masons say to me that Francis Bacon that wrote the Bible and that the Masons inspired the Bible and that's their work and everything else. I've heard all sorts of stuff, you know.
That's easily disproven. The Bible is a matter of recorded history. It's beyond argument. Yeah.
But I mean, how do you think we take on this? A lot of people say about the Jewish subject in particular. You got the Eric John Phelps side of things compared to the sort of David Icke, Alex Jones side of things. And you've got one sort of pointing at the other, saying, "Oh, he's covering up for Jews." And from where I stand, it's like, well, maybe if we want to appeal to the mainstream and get the mainstream against this depraved system, whoever's in charge of it, whether they're, you know, Jews, blacks, or space aliens, I don't care. I just want us to get past these tyrants because they shouldn't have any dominion over us. Mm. How do we best do that without alienating people?
My my goal, if you like, or my objective, or one of my objectives, I have many, is not to alienate people so much as to bring them the truth so that they will turn to the one true God and the one true faith and the one true religion and save their souls when they die. Now, having said that, let's talk a little bit of objective logic. If you go back into Luke, chapter 1, verse 26, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city in Galilee called Nazareth, and came in and said to Mary, "Hail, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, blessed art thou among women." Okay, now, remember who that was. That was the angel Gabriel, according to the New Testament.
Okay.
Now, we do fast forward for 600 years or so, and if you believe the Quran, the same angel Gabriel, now this angel Gabriel is talking about the, you know, the Son of the Most High, etc., etc., the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ, who will put us all on the right path, he will die for our sins, and he will be our saviour, our salvation.
Okay.
He taught, love thy neighbour, love even your enemies. Do good to them that hurt you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them that persecute and calumniate you. In other words, love and charity, which is a beautiful doctrine. Now, 600 years down the track, if we'd have believed the Quran, the same angel Gabriel, the same guy, an angel of God, the same angel Gabriel, was supposed to have appeared to Muhammad. And he recited a whole heap of stuff and gave, this is according to what Muslims believe, and told Muhammad to memorize it all because Muhammad was uneducated, he was illiterate, he was a sheep herder. He was totally illiterate, couldn't read or write. And if we're to believe all this, Angel Gabriel told him, put it all in the, and write it all down. It was written down on pieces of cattle hide and bits of leaves and pieces of bark, and it was all over the place. What they call surahs, S-U-R-A, that means chapters. And in various places right throughout the teachings and so forth that came down through the ages, this all came from the angel Gabriel. Infidels deserve to be killed. Kill all the infidels. Now, without going into the deep teachings, this is hardly love thy neighbour, is it? Do good to them that bless them that curse you and pray for them that persecute and calumniate you. This is the exact opposite. And that yet this is the same angel Gabriel that's dictating this stuff and asking Muhammad to memorise it. Now, an angel of God. Now, it's taught right throughout all monotheistic religions that God doesn't change. God yesterday, today, and forever. And here we have the angel Gabriel teaching and directing and dictating two diametric opposites. It's crazy. It doesn't add up. Hello?
Yeah. We're still listening.
it just doesn't add up. Anyway, I have a lot of documentation I'm about to publish on it. I feel sorry for the Muslims that believe this. And, you know, the woman caught in adultery in the New Testament, they took her up, the Jews took her up to Christ and said, this woman was caught in adultery. She deserves to be stoned to death. And he said, he started writing in the sand, let him who was without sin cast the first stone. And he started writing these Jews' private sins in the sand. He knew about them. And they all dropped the stones out of their hand and wandered off. And he turned to me. He turned to me. It's in the Bible. I'm not making things up. They disappeared real quick. And he turned to Mary and said, has anybody accused you? And he said, she said, no, Lord. And he said, neither do I accuse you. Go and sin no more. In other words, he forgave her and said, go and sin no more. And yet the angel Gabriel is saying and teaching the Mohammedans, don't get me wrong, I'm not condoning adultery, far from it, but it's a mortal sin, as you know. But the angel Gabriel is telling Muhammad to write all this down. The woman's caught in adultery. She's got to be buried up to her neck in sand so that just her head is visible. And then the mob come up with rocks and throw rocks at her head until she's stoned to death. Hey, hello.
Old Testament stuff. Yes, Old Testament stuff. I mean, what kind of gets me, Brian, in the world today? What kind of gets me in the world today is it's not only religious divisions, or not only, you know, some half-truths that have been spun here and there and different sex form. And like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not really a big fan of the Mormons either.
Well, Mormonism is Masonic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Believe totally. It or not.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Joseph, and it's the same with the Watchtower, Joseph Smith, and and he's buried under a pyramid thing.
That's right.
I'm aware of all this stuff, but what gets me more is a lot of Muslims are kind of aware of the New World Order and the effect of Masons, and the influence of Masons and their governments is kind of huge from what I've heard in the Middle East. But that's no surprise, really.
I say Masonry is Judaic.
But what gets me the most is the 5 cents world believers, the what you see is what you get. The smell, taste, touch, you know, the people who just believe reality is that confined, and they can't see evidence of design all around them. They can't see that, you know, I've got 5 fingers and 5 toes, or they see the correlation in nature as an evolutionary trait rather than, you know, and then you get into the argument of the chances of a protein forming in a rock pool with the atmospheric conditions, way less nitrogen in the air than currently exists, around 71%, back billions of years ago, if you want to argue the scientific line, and the probability of just a protein coming together by chance is 10 to the power more than there are atoms in the universe, like 10 to the power 40-something thousand.
That's right.
And so if you were to say...
don't believe in creation.
From a logical, mathematical point of view, evolution is completely improbable, completely impossible.
It's impossible. It doesn't make sense. Where does intelligence come from? You know, you can't make eyesight or intelligence out of slime that gets washed up on the beach.
How do you know when someone is looking at you from behind you?
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to explain a 5 cents world, how can you feel someone's eyes burning on the back of your head and you turn around and see someone staring at you?
Exactly.
I mean, just that is... I mean, I'd like to see an atheist explain that.
Yeah. That come out of
and
a
that's,
hatch,
and
of hatched out of a piece, hatched out of a piece of slime on the beach at midday.
That's what gets me the most, though, Brian, is because, you know, why am I so surprised that, you know, why am I surprised that people can't understand 9/11 was an inside job, or these bankers have pulled the wool over our eyes for centuries when they can't understand who they are?
Well, they're not interested, really. In Australia, we've got a an old saying. The Broncos are about to kick off. The Broncos are a Queensland football team. And the old saying in Australia is, I'm all right, Jack. In other words, I can't do anything about it. I'm all right, Jack, so why should I bother? You know? That's the attitude. I'm all right, Jack. The Broncos are about to kick off, and there's a six-pack still in the fridge. Get your priorities right, mate. Don't bother me with all this Judeo-banking New World Order nonsense. The Broncos are about to kick off. Get your priorities right.
And who implanted those desires? Who implanted those wants and needs?
Well, that's been brainwashed into us with fluoridated water and the media for a long, long time. You know, fluoridation is a... You know the real story about fluoridation, I take it, do you?
Well, the Nazis used it after they cited the British and American studies.
And the Russians used them in the gulags, and they only had to use about one quarter of the amount of guards to keep everybody in line after they added fluoride to the water.
You've been reading my mail.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're conveniently sponsored by the CIA, and we will be right back with more disinformation propaganda with the New World Order in mind.
The way it's going to be.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future in a time full of such madness and chaos. If you can't laugh about it, you'll go friggin' nuts. Also, welcome back to our very extremely, and I might even say borderlining on fabulous, guest Brian McDermott from Queensland. Now, I believe, Brian, you had something to say to our listener in Tunisia, Ahmed.
I'd just like to say, Ahmed, God loves you, and so do we. And if we can do anything by way of Christian charity to assist you to see the truth, please don't hesitate to contact us via our website, and we will do everything we can to get you the truth. As Christ said, and even you guys recognise Christ, even though you don't recognise him as Son of God, you do recognise him as a prophet, so you're sort of part of the way there. He said, not me, but he said, you shall know the truth. Shall means must in law, and the truth shall make you free. That means you must know the truth, and the truth must make you free. That's our Lord speaking, who you recognise as at least as a prophet. Now, and that is what we stand for, and that is being taught unerringly and unwaveringly for 2,000 years. And it's locked down in history. Now, the other thing is to all of you, not only Ahmed, but the rest of you too, the rest of the world, is that the angel Gabriel, or one of his cohorts, in getting Muhammad to memorize all this stuff, according to Islamic teaching, if they die for Allah or die for Muhammad or whoever the hell they die for, they not only go to heaven, but they're given, I think it's 14 virgins. Now, there's about a billion Muslims in the world, I suppose half of which would be male and half female, let's say. Let's say 500 million males. And if they all go to heaven, they get 14 virgins each. Where are all these virgins going to come from? I saw a cartoon.
Maybe that's why the New World Order's abducting young children, and they've got this big, some big factory of them.
It might be. And this cartoon had a photo of a drawing, not a photo, but a drawing of three Islamic suicide bombers outside, walking up to the pearly gates. And they're all their clothes are in tatters where the bombs have gone off. All their hair is torn all over the place, and you can see the steam, the wavy lines of steam still rising from their head as they're staggering up to the pearly gates. And Peter, or who it is, I presume it was supposed to represent St. Peter, at the pearly gates, putting his hand up saying, "Stop, stop, we've run out of virgins." I thought that was a classic, one of the best It's cartoons that I've seen in a long time.
Well, my favorite. They always try to demonize religious groups. And this is the interesting thing. So many religious groups, from Islam to Christianity, nowadays are now being demonized in favor of nihilism and atheism and all of these other kind of isms, which are pretty crap. But my favorite cartoon of that nature was the terrorist training camp. And there's a guy standing there with his beard and his turban and a suicide vest on, and he's got a classroom full of wannabe jihadists in front of him, and he says, "All right, watch me very, very closely, because I'm only going to do this once."
That's right. I saw that one too.
Another thing worth considering.
Life is not a dress rehearsal.
that too. Another thing I wanted to just add quickly is that we all know, regardless of even you know, atheists who understand the New World Order to some extent, I would argue that an atheist can fully understand the New World Order, but anyway, that's just my bias. If you understand that politics is upside down, if you understand that what we've been told is healthy for us, healthy for our environment, healthy for our children, is upside down, if you understand a lot of the media and their propaganda is all upside down, then you should also understand that if children are being taught Darwinism at school, that's probably likely to statistically to be upside down too. You do the research, you find out it is. And then if you look at who the establishment are and what they are, and you find for yourself that they are Satanists, and they're not just Masons, but a lot of them are Masons, and they're Golden Dawn, and they're OTO, and they're all sorts of. They don't have a problem with Judaism, really.
Oh, I know.
They don't have a problem even so much with Islam. The Masons, in fact, use the crescent moon and use all the same symbology. And if you see lots of spies and that in Islamic countries, I mean, there's a lot of the same symbology going on here, because should tell you something. That's a language. And who do the ruling class oppose? That should give you an idea of what the truth of the matter is.
That's right. And you see, Satan took our Lord up to the mountain, remember, and said, "Look, all these things I'll give you, all the kingdoms of the world and power over them, power over them, power over them. If falling down, you will adore me." Christ said, "Away with you. My kingdom is not of this world." Now, these people, like the Rockefellers and Rothschilds, their God is Lucifer. And General Albert Pike and some of his cohorts who have written various books. Albert Pike was the international leader of the Masonic movement some years ago, 150 years ago. In there you will find that where they admit our God is Lucifer.
Morals and dogma.
Morals and dogma. They don't have many morals, but they certainly have their dogma. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest has been Brian McDermott. I'd like to thank you so much for coming on, man. It has been enlightening.
That's all right. The invoice is in the mail.
All right. Enlightening, but not
thank
in the
you, Brian. Just read your website. Just tell us your website once again, Brian.
Our news website is Free State. This is all about www, of course. freestatevoice.com.au.
freestatevoice.com.au. Thanks for coming on the show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again another time. Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, signing off.